Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
The world-famous Phil Hendry Show here on this Friday night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Truth is our bitch, and as I mentioned Friday night, it's a joyous night, a blessed night, because the weekend is ahead of us, and we're very grateful for that. We're happy to be on the air with you. Margaret Gray is going to be singing for us this evening. This was a request, Margaret, from a Backstage Pass listener. The song, what was the song again?
You Only Live Twice. You Only Live Twice.
What's that about?
What is it about? It's about, I don't know what it's about. It's about, I'll tell you what it's about.
Yeah, what's it about?
I'll tell you what it's about.
What's it about?
Would you, I'm going to tell you what it's about. It is about how we have two lives.
Yeah, what's it about?
Will you shut up, bud? She's telling us what it's about.
Don't tell.
Thank you, Phil, and thank you, Robert. The song You Only Live Twice.
It's about living twice.
All right. Right out of the gate, huh?
Go! Oh, wow. Right on my nose.
Yep. That's why they call this right hand Judgment Day. What are you laughing at?
I didn't know they called your right hand Judgment Day, you know.
Bam.
Yeah, well, you ask around about it, okay? You want to laugh? Laughing boy, do you want to laugh?
Margaret.
Do you want to laugh, laughing boy? Ask around. Ask people that know me.
All right, I will. I mean...
The right hand is called Judgment Day. Or if you will, Judgment at Sunrise, I'm there.
Yeah, I said it. Well,
just be quiet. So You Only Live Twice is about what?
You only live... I was going to tell you, now I won't.
All right, I'll tell you. You Only Live Twice...
No, I'll do it. You Only Live Twice is about having two lives. One you learn with, and the other you lose...
One you live with.
I said I'd do it.
All I did was ask what's about.
Yeah, but then you go, it's about living twice. You didn't really ask anything. It's about two lives.
It's about how we all have two lives. One that we learn with and the other that we live with. So in the song, Nancy Sinatra, who made it famous, and I love Nancy. I know Nancy, and she's a dear, dear girl. Her family, a beautiful family. How do I like the way she sang it? I don't. But I've told her that to her face, and I said it with love, and...
You're kidding me.
No, I'm not kidding you. I'm not.
You said to Nancy Sinatra what?
I said, Nancy, you know I love you. You know that I feel that you're very talented, and I do. And, of course, how will we ever really be able to tell future generations what your father's contribution was? A wonderful family. I said, but the way you sing that song, You Only Live Twice, is a criminal act. And I said, but I say that with love. And you know what? She looked at me. I thought I saw a tear, but she said, I need to hear this. I said, you do. She said, I know. I need to hear this. So we sat down. We decided to go back and have more lunch because we'd been having lunch over here at Nobu's over here in Malibu.
Okay.
So, don't you have a comment on that?
What?
What do you want me to say?
We had lunch at Nobu's.
Okay, so that's a Hollywood place.
Yes, it's a very exclusive place.
I wouldn't say it's exclusive. Anybody can walk in there.
Well, now you've taken, Phil, what was a Hollywood moment, and you've defecated on it, so thank you.
Easy. No, I didn't. Who cares where you had lunch? You're talking about Nancy Sinatra, and you tell her that your singing of You Only Live Twice is a criminal act.
Don't raise your voice to me, Phil. I'm trying to tell you something. You're going, yeah, 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 yeah.
All right, then what is it?
I said to her, I love you. You know that I love you. And we ordered more lunch. I said, I love you so much, we'll go ahead and we'll order another lunch, even though I was battling... A weight problem that had deposited another 10 pounds right on, all right, I'll say it, on my ass. Okay, go ahead and laugh if you want, but it was very serious for me.
I'm not laughing.
The hell you're not, because I'm looking at you going,
well, you're the one that did it.
I'm the one that did what?
You're the one that's eating so much, you got another 10 pounds on your ass, but you went ahead and you risked it because you wanted to tell Nancy Sinatra something. So you went back into Nobu. Did you guys have sushi?
Well, now, what do you think we had at Nobu's? It's a Japanese place. There's a guy going, oh, so, all that stuff. What do you think they serve?
They could serve tempura. You know, they could serve a lot of stuff.
It's a sushi place. God. So I said to her, let's get a couple of more spicy rolls, spicy tuna. I'll split a cut roll with you. And she said, all right, that sounds good. And then I said, well, but really I'd like... Well, I said, I really would like the whole roll myself. Could you get a separate one for yourself? She said, all right. And that's when I said, Nancy, I love you, but what you did to You Only Live Twice is... I'll never be able to describe it. I said, Walt Whitman said of the Civil War, future generations will never understand. I said, I'm tempted to say that about the way you, what you done, what you did, what you done to...
What you did.
What you did to, you only did it twice.
You only lived twice.
I mean, you only lived twice, yes.
So, and she remained your friend?
Of course, why would she not? Phil, it's called honesty between friends.
Okay, but I mean, you got a singer, a performer, all right?
So am I.
Okay, can you handle it if somebody said to you what you did to that song, as Whitman said of the Civil War, we'll never be able to tell future generations?
Go straight to the devil.
Where are you going, Ms. Gray?
I'm going to the bathroom because I gotta take a dump. I mean it.
I'm sorry. I couldn't help it. It was so unbelievably funny to me.
And what's funny about that?
Oh, come on. The drama of that. Future generations will scarcely believe what you did to that song in singing You Only Live Twice.
You know what I think is really dishonest, Phil?
I'm not going to have a conversation with you while you're sitting in the toilet, okay? So it's not going to happen. Thank you very much. And welcome to the program, folks. Another show that looks like it's limping out of the gate yet again. I can't get things going here for love or money. We did have a story to read to you about Zsa Zsa Gabor. It is kind of an interesting story. It's an interesting life. It's an interesting woman. It's an interesting legend. It's you know, there's every time you see the headline Zsa Zsa, any part of the headline says Zsa Zsa Gabor's, now what? And she's very elderly now, man. She's in her 90s, so it's got nothing to do with anything other than, apparently, she's on her last leg. They don't have any bread, man. Can you dig? I mean, see, that's this thing that just kills me. It hurts, you know, to hear people who are of advanced years, especially somebody like a Zsa Zsa Gabor. She must have made a ton of dough in her life, man, or should have. You know, she could have been her generation's Kim Kardashian, if you want, or Paris Hilton, because if nothing else, Zsa Zsa Gabor was a socialite, a party girl, and that's the role that she played, you know, in during her time as a prominent fixture in the entertainment firmament. Yeah, she was an actress. I saw her in a flick. I don't think I ever saw her by accident in a movie except one time. I never intended to see any movie that Zsa Zsa Gabor was in. I mean, I did see Queen of Outer Space only because it was like an outer space movie, and I was like six, and so it looked good. It was on TV. It was a Saturday afternoon. There was nothing else on but probably Polka Parade, and I turned it on, and there was this thing, and it was cool. You know, it was outer space. And then there was another thing that she was in, which I forget, and then that was it. And then along comes that show Green Acres.
Yeah, that wasn't her, though. That was another one that was named Gabor.
Yeah, that was her sister. So the one Gabor that actually knocked it out of the park with a hit TV series was, who was it?
Gabor, man. Zsa Gabor. No, it wasn't, man. It was another one.
Well, how many of them were there?
I don't know, man. You said I thought it was Zsa Zsa. No, man. Everybody knows that there is more than one Gabor.
Yeah, I know. There was, Robert. But I can't remember her name. Who? Oh, Ava Gabor. Yeah, Ava. Was that her name? Ava?
Yeah, she was married to Frank Sinatra.
Who was?
Ava Gabor.
No, Ava Gardner was. Oh, will you get out of here? I don't care. So anyway, where was I? All right, screw it, man. Well, let's take a break. Coming back, Margaret Gray with You Only Live Twice. Also, more conversation about how Nancy Sinatra... I mean, can we get to some news here, man? Isn't there anything happening, or is it all just bullcrap? Okay. By the way, the Oklahoma City Thunder have prevented the Pacers from clinching a division title with a win this evening. We'll have that and other NBA news. The Zsa Zsa Gabor story is also coming up. Apparently, she can now stay in her home. That's what I wanted to... Yeah, okay, great. There. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
I'm warming up. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm warming up, everyone. You only live twice.
famous Phil Henry Show.
And a very pleasant good evening to you, and welcome back here. The world-famous Phil Henry Show. Margaret Gray is going to be singing You Only Live Twice. More stories from her about Nancy Sinatra. We'll tell you about Zsa Zsa and her struggles. And we have Robert Greene on the line with us, though. Very quick, just a quick visit with Robert, if we can get. I think he's not there yet, right?
He's going to come on the phone in a minute. He had to take care of something in a store.
Okay, Robert Greene's going to join us here with just a very quick background on what's happening there, retail-wise, in his store. Is that him there? Hey, Bob, how are you?
Phil, I'm doing very well, and as well as can be expected. And thank you for taking a phone call. I realize it's a little bit on last-minute notice, but I wanted to make an announcement. I did go through David Hall.
Yeah, I got a call from David during the break.
I want to go on record now, and I couldn't be more serious in what it is that I'm going to say. Could you close the door, Jimmy? Thank you. I couldn't be more serious on what it is I'm about to say, and I want to be heard loud and clear so there's no mistaking. Nostradamus was a lying whore. Nostradamus was a lying whore. Hold on for a minute. $2.99. There you go. That's your change. Sorry, Phil, hold on. What? That's your change. Well, I don't know what you want me to say. Nostradamus, Phil, was a lying whore. $2.99. That's celery. Nostradamus, for his dirty filth, $2.99.
Wait, Bob, can you get somebody else to work the cash register?
Yeah, here. Susie, come on over here and do this, will you? Nostradamus should only, I haven't read how Nostradamus died. I hope he died from the plague. I hope he died from the bubonic plague. Phil, can you hear me? Because I can't even hear myself.
No, yeah, where are you?
I'm in my store right now. I'm still working. Turn the TV down, Jimmy, and shut the doors and get everybody away from me. I'm on the radio right now. I'm on the Phil Henry. Nostradamus should have only died from the bubonic plague. I hope he did. I hope he died painfully. I hope he died with big bruised God. I hate him.
All right, let's talk. What's at the bottom of this? What is at the center of this angst that you're feeling here about Nostradamus?
Phil, the point is, and I don't think I really need to explain it. The end of the world predictions that were made by Nostradamus, the end of the world predictions made by the Mayans, but particularly the end of the world predictions made by Nostradamus, which did not come true. If you put that all together as a mathematical equation, you can only come up with one quantity, and that is whore, as in lying, cheating, crawling, swamp-running whore. That's 60 cents, honey. Thank you very much.
Would you get off the cash register?
I'm sorry. Susie, come on back. I absentmindedly got back on the cash register. Sorry.
All right, so Nostradamus was a lying, just so I've got this right.
And you should get it right. A lying, dirty, filthy, lying, swamp-running whore. either you're laughing or you've got a very bad cough.
I got to be honest with you, it was a laugh.
Is it? Let me ask you something, Phil. Do you think that the pressures that retail people are under these days, do you think that's funny?
No, I do not think it's funny. I do not think it's funny.
Because that's what's going on, and part of it caused by the scum-sucking dog like that. That lived back in the 15th or 16th or 17th century. I don't know when this guy lived. But because this liar, and to get his kicks, because that's what I think it was going. But this place is like air traffic control. Will you guys get out of here? I'm sorry, Phil. I got a lot of people in here. They want their paychecks.
Well, give them their paychecks. Don't be talking to me.
Well, no. They've got their paychecks. What do you guys want? He's got the paychecks downstairs. Yeah, Carolyn's got the paychecks downstairs. Sorry. I apologize, Phil. This guy, Nostradamus, in making these predictions of the end times, have you ever heard this phrase, the end times?
Sure.
This guy, Nostradamus, in making these predictions of the end times, essentially put so much pressure on individuals such as myself to stock up on all kinds of food and all kinds of survival gear and all kinds of, in my case, a lot of dehydrated products, dehydrated scrambled eggs and so on and so forth, right? And they had this Nostradamus on television morning, noon, and night talking about how the world's coming to an end. Well, he's a dirty, filthy liar. The world didn't come to an end. I've watched every show about this Nostradamus, and he is so full of crap his eyes are brown. Now,
well, I mean, all right, so he's full of crap, but this is a very personal thing for you.
Of course it's personal.
Well, you're saying, not only was the guy wrong, and of course some people would argue we don't yet know.
Oh, get out of here with that. We don't yet know. It was supposed to end at the turn of the 21st century. Am I right or am I wrong?
What was?
The world.
Well, there were some people said yes. Okay.
What do you mean some people? The whole damn thing was supposed to come down at the beginning of the 21st century.
Yeah, but that was about...
No. Don't give me that Y2K, because that was going to be part of the predictions that this guy, Nostradamus made. Is that right?
Well, Nostradamus predicted the end of the world. I don't know what... what time...
Oh, come on, yeah. At the 21st century. Let me tell you one other thing that I found out. When it comes to Hitler, they love to point out this Hitler thing. That is a dirty lie. Nostradamus didn't know his ass from a hole in the ground about Hitler. He never did use the word Hitler. And he never said anything about anybody coming out of Germany and doing this or that or something else. It's all stuff that was manipulated by a lot of these... And I've seen them on TV, Phil, use of these fruit balls that they've got on the History Channel, which I like to call it the Pistry Channel, P-I-N...
All right, but let's keep the language clean, Bob, please, okay?
Well, sure, we'll keep it clean, but I'm a businessman. I'm losing my shirt. I've got guys that I know in this business losing their shirt.
Well, how are you guys losing your shirts other than to say you overstocked for something that didn't take place? Because I have to tell you this.
Well, let me tell you.
Well, hold on, because you're not making much sense. If, for instance, people are making making a run on supplies because Nostradamus said the world is coming to an end, that's good for you.
Well, no, it isn't, because it's not like they're all coming in here at once. What's happening is this. On any given month, there's some doomsday cult out there that is saying that the world's coming to an end. And it all goes back to Nostradamus, and it all goes back to that lying two-bit. And this guy was a monk. Did you know that? Phil, did you know that?
Who, Nostradamus was a monk?
Yeah, he was essentially a priest.
I didn't know that. I don't know if that's true.
Well, I'm telling you right now, it's true.
He was a priest.
That's my understanding, yeah. So, the church had it. The church was up to its elbows and stuff. But here's a guy that for whatever passed for laughs in the 14th century, the 15th century, whatever passed for a good time on a Friday night in the 14th century, that's what this guy was into. And I guess what passed for a real barrel of laughs back in those days was to sit down and write some weird poem. Woo! All right.
Well, all right, but I mean, they obviously survived to the present age and have been taken very, very seriously by people.
Well, that's true. And in retrospect, I ask myself why. I ask myself, how could you read this garbage and think anything other than the guy that wrote it needs to be put in a... I'm telling you, can I get a glass of water, please? I'm losing my voice here, Phil.
All right, yeah, the guy that wrote it.
The guy that wrote it needs to be put in a rubber room. And I'm talking about that Nostradamus.
All right, I'm talking with Robert Green, by the way, from Fraser Foods. How did you get negatively impacted by the predictions of Nostradamus?
Because what Nostradamus was predicting was not the end of the world so much as it was calamity. Now, you get a good, healthy run. See, this lady in this commercial for Medicare, I forget what it is. Boy, she, for a 60-year-old woman, she's a real piece of ass. Have you seen this?
Can you watch it? We're on the air.
I'm terribly sorry.
We're on the air, Bob.
I'm terribly sorry, Phil. I didn't know that.
Yes, you did.
I forgot. I'm sorry.
You got to watch the way you're very angry and you're very animated, and I understand all of it. And whether I agree with you or not, I respect your opinion.
And I appreciate that.
But you got to remember, as you get very emotional and you do emote, I'm live on the radio.
I understand, Phil. I saw in the pre-show Jay Moore called you and you had him, and you weren't afraid of him saying bad words.
Because it was the pre-show. It was the pre-show. So Jay had called up, and I asked his permission, too, and we talked a little bit, and then we put the audio on mute. Bob, hang on for just a minute.
Well, I got a lot more I want to say here.
All right, hold on for just a minute. Bob Green with us talking about Nostradamus and what a, quote, his words, lying whore, lying swamp-running whore, Nostradamus was. The world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Another thing, this guy, this Nostradamus. I mean, this guy has committed crimes.
This is the world famous Phil Henry Show.
On the phone with me, on the phone with me is Robert Green from Fraser Foods Market. Did you want to say something?
Well, I my question is, how long are you guys going to...
Margaret, this is Robert Green. I'm sorry. I know that I'm taking up time. You were going to sing, right?
Yes, I was going to sing.
I'm telling Phil about something that I think is a little bit... I'm not saying it's more important, but I wanted to get this said to the consumers out there that we're under an awful lot of pressure because a lot of people, not necessarily the people I'm talking to tonight, but a lot of people took this guy, Nostradamus, who I wouldn't know if I fell over him in the dark. I wouldn't know who this guy is. But all of this Nostradamus, I found out that everything they're saying about this Nostradamus is a dirty, filthy lie. Nostradamus himself is a liar.
Well, what do you mean it's a lie?
Oh, wait just a second. I got to say something. How long are you two going to keep this little circle you-know-what going on?
Circle what?
This little... You're holding hands and paddling.
Margaret, we're talking on the air here. What do you mean, circle?
I didn't say the word. The two of you guys, how long are you going to be spanking each other?
All right. If you don't mind... Excuse me. If you don't mind...
See, Bud, finally you're laughing at something that ought to be laughed at.
If you don't mind, I'm talking to him right now. We'll get to you in a minute.
You two guys with your little circle...
Excuse me, I don't need that. I'm a successful businessman. I don't need to be told that I'm in the middle of a circle, okay?
Hey, let's watch the language.
Where is she?
I'm right here. I'm not going anywhere.
Excuse me, man. I would expect you to have a little more respect.
Did you call me man?
No, I said ma'am.
No, you didn't. You said man.
No, he said ma'am. All right, now that we've got all of that out of our system and we've wasted God knows how much time...
Hold on for a minute. Would you guys turn that television set down before I put my foot through it? Sorry. Thank you. Go ahead, Phil.
Okay. Nostradamus made a series of predictions. It seems to me, if you don't mind me saying, Bob, have you seen something on television?
Yes, I did. I saw something on TV here just this evening, and they're talking about how they've interpreted Nostradamus, and he said Germany, and he said the year 1999, and he said all this stuff, and it's all bull crap. B-U-L-C-A-P. Bull crap. All right?
That's not how you spell bull crap.
Well, who gives a damn, Phil? I'm trying to make a point here, okay?
All right, I understand. So you're saying that everything he said was bull crap?
Everything this guy said is horse dung. Apparently Nostradamus was... fooling around, writing poetry. As I said, this is what passed for a good time on a Friday night wherever this guy's from.
Where is he from?
Nostradamus is from where, Phil? You know.
No, I don't. I guess he's from... Was he French?
French? With a name like Nostradamus?
I don't know, man. You're the guy that was watching the show.
Well, maybe he was. I don't know. But I find it fascinating that people will say, here's what Nostradamus said. He said this, he said that, and nobody challenges it.
Well, how do you know he didn't say this? What was it that you saw?
I saw a program where they said that if you translate what this guy, Nostradamus, actually said, he doesn't say anything about Hitler, about 1999, about anything having to do with the end of the world. It's all a dirty swamp-running lie. That's why I'm saying that.
What is it that with this swamp-running lie? I don't understand that. Why are you saying that?
I'm saying it because that's what Nostradamus was. He was a liar, and once he got his lie out there, he took the money and he'd run through a swamp to get away from people. He just strikes me as that kind of a guy. He strikes me as a swamp runner.
What is a swamp runner? I'd like to know.
Bob?
Are you two kidding me? You don't know?
No, I don't know what a swamp runner is.
Nor I.
Nor you. All right, I'll tell you.
And I don't appreciate the sarcasm.
All right, a swamp runner is any guy that's willing to run through a swamp. And I only know of one kind of person that will run through a swamp. Some guy that's being paid enough. Would you run through a swamp?
If I was trying to get away from somebody.
Well, let's say you're not getting away from somebody. Let's just say you're well, yeah, okay, you're getting away from somebody, but what are you talking about? What do you mean if you're getting away from somebody?
You just asked me, would I run through a swamp? Yes, if I was trying to get away from someone.
Oh, get out of here. No, you wouldn't. You'd run through a swamp. Who are you getting away from?
Well, why would you ask me a question like that?
Well, why would you ask me? You know what, Phil? You're on your own. You and Butch there, you're on your own.
Oh, my God. Is he? Did he hang up?
Yeah.
Bob, I know you're listening, and I dare you to say that to my face any day, any time. You name the place, any time, anywhere.
All right. Okay, we done?
Well, that was the rudest thing I've ever heard.
All right, he called you Butch. Mr. Green, here's the thing. If you're having a downturn in business, that's about as bizarre an explanation for why your business is turning south as I've ever heard. Because Nostradamus told people the world is coming to an end, and it didn't come to an end, and so they've told you to stick your business up your you-know-what because they don't need it anymore. So Bob overstocks dehydrated foods. He overstocks batteries. He overstocks whatever it is you sell in a supermarket for the end times. And the world doesn't end, and calamity doesn't strike, and we just continue on with our lives, and so he's stuck with all this survival stuff, I guess.
Well, how do these other survival places do it?
They do that all the time. They make a lot of money.
Who does, the survival places?
Yeah, I mean, all they do is they advertise in a survival magazine. They advertise in a gun magazine. They advertise in the right places. And so the people that go to those survival places, that's what they want, you know.
So there's never a shortage of customers?
No, there's never a shortage of customers. Bob Green, on the other hand, that guy's got a supermarket.
Yeah, all that guy does, he's selling lettuce and celeries and the different celeries, okay? And then...
What do you mean the different celeries?
Just never mind. What?
And then... After the, you know, after the Nostradamus says what's going to happen, doesn't happen, then he's stuck with all kinds of celery.
What is it with you and celery?
That's what they order up.
All right, but the point is he's got an extra supply of food, right?
Yeah, he's got all that extra food. Nobody's going to come buy it.
Do you guys buy that what he's saying is true? Are you saying to me that you buy this, that Nostradamus is a swamp running... Is a dirty swamp running liar? Are you buying that?
Well, I mean, you gotta probably take into consideration some of that, but I wouldn't say that's his whole business.
Yeah, Bob Green, he's just he walks around. He's got one wedged all the time. Every time he comes on a show, he has one wedged up there.
Well, I would have to agree with Bud, and
I don't know anything about it.
Well, I do. I mean, come on, you've heard of Nostradamus, haven't you?
I've heard of Nostradamus. I thought that was the football team, if I'm wrong.
No, man, that's Notre Dame.
Nostradamus is not Notre Dame, the Fighting Irish?
That's who I've heard of, yeah.
No. This guy was a prophet. He was a poet, and I think the description is adequate. He was a writer. He wrote these things called quatrains, which is actually a description of the stanza of poetry that is written, and in it, with a great deal of symbolism, some people seem to think he was predicting the future. Now, I've heard other people say, I've heard the same thing, that Nostradamus didn't predict Jack. That this is all being read into what he wrote. That even the word hister, you know this word?
Yeah, that's that guy.
That's that guy, huh?
What guy?
The guy that wrote Ted's of Beverly Hills Jingle.
You stupid ass!
Wait! Hester, Eric Hester wrote that. Eric Hester's a friend of our of the show, and his sister Nikki, we know her. She just got married. Yeah, Eric Hester. Okay.
Yeah. So was he part of the Hitler family?
No, he was not. Okay. Hester, people seem to think this guy Nostradamus was talking about Hitler. That's what they're saying.
Yeah, that's it. Hitler. And that's saying that Hitler was predicted by this guy Nostradamus. In a quatrain, you know?
Where?
In a quatrain.
Yeah, but what?
Quatrain is the... All right, we're all done.
Yeah, but I don't understand.
You go and cry someplace else, okay? We're all done. Margaret Gray comes up next to sing her performance of You Only Live Twice. And Margaret, you are dedicating this to who?
Yes, I'm dedicating this to the original version of You Only Live Twice. That was, and she didn't mean to, and I love her like a sister, that was murdered by Nancy Sinatra some 27... God, I don't know. How many years ago was it now? It's been 27 years. No, 47, 57. Do you have a calculator?
It's 47 years.
It's 47 years, Phil. I can do it.
Well, you didn't, and we've got to take a break. We'll be right back. Well, actually, we were a minute early.
Yes, we're a minute early.
All right, so coming up here is the song You Only Live Twice. Now, you want to sing this song. Why?
Didn't you tell me that somebody requested it?
Yeah, someone requested it.
Robert, don't hit the mic. What?
Somebody a BSP requested it.
That's right. A BSP has requested the singing of You Only Live Twice. We also have the Zsa Zsa Gabor story coming up. Oh, I know what I've forgotten to tell you guys, of course. Online at philhenryshow.com. Philhenryshow.com is where we have our backstage pass stuff, so you can watch our video. Our video cast commenced this evening at 9:15 Pacific. And it was true. Right in the middle of our video cast, our pre-show, the phone rang, and there was Jay Moore talking to me about some ideas and this and that and something else. We let our audience in on as much as we could, and then Jay said, take me off of speaker because I have some highly confidential and classified stuff to tell you. And that's exactly what I did.
That's a jip, because the people are saying that's where they pay for it.
Well, that's just too bad, okay? Because I'm not going to put on the... I don't give a damn if we do run an uncensored... And we do run an uncensored pre-show, folks. Believe me when I tell you. But if this is about business... You know, this uncensored pre-show doesn't mean that I'm putting... Do you think I should be putting people's personal information on it?
No.
But you don't understand. There are things that you don't let people know, even if you're running an uncensored... feed.
Exactly. Okay.
Well, what? Like what?
Like whatever we don't want them to know. It could be something having to do with a personal, like an address. It could be personal information. No, it is not unlimited uncensored. It's uncensored as to language. It's uncensored. A lot of it's uncensored as to our mood, emotion, etc. But no, it's not all. Wow, uncensored. That means well. I guess I have to tell everybody how much money I make every year and where it is that guy is hiding out so that no one can kill him, okay? All right, we'll be right back. The world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL, online at philhenryshow.com. That backstage pass, $9.99 a month, and you get over 15 years of full radio shows. Along with today's show and then the archives, you can listen to two shows a day, and you'll never be done with the archives until time ends.
Yeah, until Nostradamus comes back.
Till Nostradamus comes back, okay.
Isn't he supposed to come back, or is that... Oh, that was Jesus.
Yeah, that was Jesus. Yeah, that guy Jesus. Yeah, okay. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth
wow.
is our
well,
bitch.
Well, I'd say he wouldn't.
The Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Margaret, take it away. We're going to be listening now to Nancy Sinatra. You wanted to play this version first, correct?
Yes, I did, Phil, and I'll tell you why. As I said, I love Nancy. I want to point out, I think there's strong points here, yes. But I think overall, when you hear this song, you'll hear me sing it much better. Here is Nancy Sinatra, and You Only Live Twice. Let's listen to Nancy as she sings this classic song. Written by Jean-Paul Bluteau. I don't know who wrote it. I just...
What, are you making the name up?
Well, I don't know who wrote it, Phil. It's Jean-Paul something. Here's Nancy. Very dear girl, but the voice, it's bad.
You only live twice.
Oh!
Or so it seems.
You can hear her flatting.
One life. For yourself and one for your dream.
Oh, that is painful. It hurts me.
You drift through.
I think that, you know, forgive me, Phil. I think it hurts her father, who's no longer...
All right.
Listen to that. Ted, did you hear that? Ted. All right, I can't stand it any longer. So that's Nancy. I love her dearly, and...
Did she ever sing anything that you liked?
What was that? Did you see that, bud?
Yeah, you go. Did she ever sing anything you liked?
Were you killing a flea?
I don't know why I clapped. I just clapped.
Did she ever do what?
Did she ever sing anything that you liked?
I love the song she did with the hunky cowboy, Summer Wine. I could have torn... What I could have done with that song, me and that guy Lee... What was his name? Lee Greenwood?
No, Lee Greenwood. Anyway, here comes Margaret Gray.
Yes, here is my version now of this lovely song, You Only Live Twice. Now listen to how I do it.
You're going to sing the same one Nancy Sinatra did?
Yes, that's what I'm going to do. Wow. I love the Chinese thing. You only live twice. You see what I'm doing there? Oh, so it seems. One life. Hold on for a minute. Hold on. Stop everything. Please. Stop it! What are you trying to do to me?
Margaret, I'm sorry. What happened?
It's the wrong key. That's what... I've got to start higher. You only... There, that's perfect. Hold on.
God, everybody not know.
Hold on, stop. What did you say?
Everybody not...
He's saying no one knows what it is you're doing.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm glad I have an interpreter along the way here in Budville. God.
I'm just saying no one not... Well...
Never mind, will you, Bud? Just go ahead and sing your song.
I love this. Do. I hope I've got to get the right key. Once I get the right key, I am dynamite. I am pure dynamite. You. Who's playing the clarinet?
I don't know.
No, that's all wrong. No, there shouldn't be a clarinet there. Stop it. Stop the music. No, I don't remember a clarinet. Get my husband on the phone, please.
Wait a minute, Margaret. Wait, how much time we got to take with this?
Get my husband on the... Pardon me for just one moment.
Okay, yeah. Hi, Frank. Margaret's on the phone. I want to know... yeah, okay. Yeah, he's there.
Frank, dear. Frank?
Yeah, what's up?
Frank, was there a clarinet in You Only Live Twice?
In the song You Only Live Twice, is that what you're referring to?
Yes.
Because there was a film.
No, in the song, was there a clarinet?
All right, but I'm just saying there could have been a clarinet in the movie.
You mean in the soundtrack?
No, there might have been, one of the principals might have been playing a clarinet, is all I'm saying.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, what are you talking about?
Who am I, who's that?
It's Phil Hendry, we're on the air.
Oh, hi, hey Phil, how you doing?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm better than Custard. So what do you want, Margaret?
I'll ask it again, Frank. Was there a clarinet in You Only Live Twice?
I don't remember anyone playing a clarinet.
I didn't say somebody...
Frank, we're not asking about the movie. We're asking about in the song. Do you remember... Why are we even asking this question?
Because the clarinet's throwing me off, all right? I don't remember anyone putting their mouth on a woodwind instrument, if you must know. God!
What difference does that make? You're acting nuts.
Yeah, I don't even understand that.
The two of you have got nothing to say about this.
I don't recall, Margaret. I don't remember. Anyway, I remember Woody Herman. I remember she played a clarinet. And, boy, Woody cooked. When she put her lips around that at Blue, I mean, nobody topped Frank. What the hell? What was her name again? Benny Goodman. Is that it?
No, you were saying Woody Herman.
Oh, yeah, Woody Herman and Benny Goodman, both of them were phenomenal. I remember seeing Benny Goodman before she died. I saw her, and I'll tell you who else I saw. I saw Peggy Lee before he died, and I saw the two of them together at Barnesford Gymnasium. It was a dedication of the new gym where I'd gone to high school, Barnesford, New Pennsylvania.
What's New Pennsylvania?
The state below New York. I mean New Jersey. There's Barnesford, New Jersey. And I remember this gorgeous, gorgeous woman coming out on stage, and I said, "That's him." And it was Peggy Lee. All those years later, Phil, can you imagine that?
Peggy Lee, huh? And was Peggy Lee with Benny Goodman?
Peggy Lee was with Benny Goodman, yeah. He hooked up with her, and there was a rumor that she wanted to make him her husband, she wanted to make him her wife, that was it. But her...
Okay, thank you.
That's my husband you hung up on.
I hung up on a babbling imbecile. That's who I hung up on. He, her, her, he.
You only live twice, or so it seems. One for yourself, and one for who?
We'll be right back. Phil Henry Show.
Well, how does it go?
Did you ever see Benny Goodman?
Phil,
the way she blew that thing was.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
Back here at the El Pacifico, the world famous Phil Henry Show. Gorgeous day today, by the way, out here at the old El Pacifico. Did you see it, Margaret?
I wasn't here. We were in Santa Monica. It was very, very beautiful, yes.
And I got a feeling that we haven't had a lot of rain in California, and I don't want to bore you with the details, because as you know, when it comes to weather, out here we are the biggest bunch of sissies the world has ever known. If it rains, we just, oh my goodness, you know. Not all of us, but it's just, and this winter has been pretty mild. I mean, I haven't seen a lot of rain. That generally means something bad. It means that when the summer rolls around, things are going to be dry.
Oh, and then we're going to have fires. Oh, God, thank you for reminding me. You know that we've got one home in the canyon up there.
Well, if I were you guys, I would make sure that you got the insurance up to speed, because I don't know. I don't want to predict anything.
No, if I were you guys, well, that right away makes me fear for...
Don't worry about it. I'm just saying, when it doesn't rain in the winter... You know.
Well, now that we've got that nice piece of news, but you are talking about Zsa Zsa Gabor, and having heard what you just said, I think I'd rather be her.
You'd rather be Zsa Zsa Gabor?
Yes, because if my home burns down, Phil, I'd rather be Zsa Zsa, who's been told that she can stay in her home for as long as she's alive, but then after she dies, I believe they've got to sell it, right?
Well, here's what happened. To a point, you're right, Margaret. The husband of ailing movie actor Zsa Zsa Gabor reached a deal on Friday that will allow the cash-strapped couple to stay in their Bel Air mansion for the remainder of her life. A Los Angeles judge ruled that Gabor's ninth husband, Frederick Prinz von Anhalt, could sell the four-bedroom, five-bathroom mansion in a deferred transaction. Under the deal, the buyer will allow Gabor, age 96, and von Anhalt to remain in the home for the last 3 years or until the actress dies and pay them $325,000 a year, Gabor's publicist John Blanchett told the Reuters news agency. Gabor, the Hungarian-born star of the 1950s film Moulin Rouge and Lily, has been in and out of a hospital since breaking her hip in 2010 and having her leg amputated in January 2011. She didn't have both of her legs amputated, Bud. She just had one.
I thought they said both. She woke up and the legs were gone.
What did he just say?
What are you talking about?
That's what I heard.
Yeah, I heard that like in that movie, you know.
What movie?
Scream Again, man. You said the guy woke up and he pulled the covers back and his legs and was like gone.
Yeah, that's what they said. She woke up and she goes, ah!
You know, I ought to smack you just for that dumbass stuff.
What?
But what are you talking about, you jackass? She woke up, pulled the covers back, and her legs were...
Well, what are you laughing at that for?
Just the absurdity. You guys, you know, I talk about a movie. The next thing you know, you guys are... They didn't do that to her. They wouldn't do that to her. If they said, Ms. Gabor, we're going to have to take your legs, she's fully aware of it. It ain't some horror movie from the Hammer Film Studios.
But yeah, man, but what if she's too old to understand it?
Yeah.
And
tell Phil what you thought about, Robert.
If she's too old to understand it, and like she's got that, what's it called?
What? Alzheimer's?
Yeah, she has Alzheimer's. And she's told, we're going to have to amputate your leg, and she doesn't know. But then she, like, gets better for, like, just a few minutes. And she says, well, I think I'll go.
Yeah, it's like she's got to go take, you know, squeeze one, you know, go to the bathroom.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, so she's going to get up and go to the bathroom. And she goes, ah, my legs is gone.
Yeah.
Did you guys both come up with that together, or was it just you?
No, I thought of it.
Oh, that was great.
That was excellent, Robert.
Fantastic. Wow, that you would just come up with that by yourself, that she just pulled the covers and went, ah.
Yeah, you're laughing about it.
Of course I'm laughing about it, you clown. No, she didn't have Alzheimer's and then suddenly got better and realized her legs were gone. The woman had diabetes and still does, and that often is the result. Blood circulation is compromised when you have diabetes, and in this instance, one of her legs was amputated. Let me just say this about that. You two guys are young, and you ain't worrying about those things right now. Someday you may have to deal with that.
Well, what do you want me to do about it now, man?
Yeah, they don't have a shot for it.
You can eat better instead of the crap that you eat. You can give yourself diabetes by eating garbage. Next thing you know, you got a blood sugar problem, and then the next thing you know, off comes your leg. So one of these days, bud, you'll be sitting in the hospital bed, and you'll come out of your Alzheimer's, and you'll go to the bathroom to, quote, pinch one off, and you'll pull back the covers, and you'll go, ah, my legs are gone.
Shut up.
Yes, Sal, you don't like that, do you?
Cut it out.
No, I'm not going to cut it out. That could happen to you. So have a little charity and have a little compassion.
That would be funny, though, if it happened to you.
Well, if it happened to you.
Do you guys mind?
Oh.
Because I'm going to continue doing the show, or I don't want to interrupt your conversation you're having.
All right.
Gabor, the Hungarian-born star of 1950s films Moulin Rouge.
You're already talking about this part.
Will you Gabor, the Hungarian-born star of the 1950s films Moulin Rouge and Lily, has been in and out of the hospital since breaking her hip in 2010 and having her leg amputated in January 2011. Von Anhalt put the house up for sale for an asking price of $15 million 2 years ago, citing financial difficulties and the cost of medical bills for Gabor. The decision is going to make her very happy, Von Anhalt told reporters after Friday's court hearing. Hopefully she'll be with us for more than 3 years. Her mother lived to be, does it say 100 or 102? I think 102.
How old is she now?
Zsa Zsa Gabor is 96.
Well, so all he wants is that she's going to live 4 more years? That's kind of, I think that's cold, man.
That's cold. He's going to say that she only lived for 4 more years.
He didn't say that. He's just saying, basically what he's saying is, I hope she lives a long time. 4 more years. Yeah, I hope she lives 4 more years. Anyway, Gabor's Hillside home is in one of the most exclusive areas of Los Angeles. The grounds were used to film scenes for the Ben Affleck Oscar-winning film Argo, as well as an upcoming HBO film about the life of late entertainer Liberace. Blanchett said, Gabor, this is not Kate Blanchett. I'm just kidding. It's John Blanchett.
Wouldn't that be if Kate Blanchett was her publicist as well as an actress? Like, she's doing those two jobs.
Well, it might actually save Kate Blanchett some money because she could do her own publicity.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, Blanchett said Gabor remained bedridden but was in better health recently than previous years and had enjoyed a 96th birthday party at the house in February, attended by more than 100 friends. There was booze, nudity.
Really?
I'm kidding. She's 96. All right, so there's Zsa Zsa Gabor. $15 million, man. How do you know, the cash-strapped couple, they got a house that's worth $15 million.
Yeah, but the real estate market's soft.
The real estate market may be soft, like your head. The real estate market may be soft, okay? But in that range, that kind of bread, it ain't soft, man. Those houses, they'll sell. And somebody's out there with the $15 million to buy it or, you know, somewhere.
Well, what do you think it would go for?
I don't know. It's not going to go for less than... If the 50, just call it $15 million, okay? I don't know, what, 14, 12, 13? Up in that area of life, I got no say. I don't know. You know, when it comes to anything past a few million, I don't get it anymore. A $15 million spread, you know, that we're talking about a financial reality
that the rest of us, it's not affected by these downturns in the economy. Those are people that have got, they're rich, they always were rich, they always will be rich, and no freaking recession, if they know halfway what they're doing.
Well, you don't think a recession would hurt people like that?
I don't think a recession is going to hurt someone in that financial bracket near the way it hurts the rest of us. I think somebody, and I'm not talking about the money that they've saved, I'm just saying that they're so far removed from, the reality of all that. All right, so that's the story there. We're going to come back here on a world-famous Phil Henry Show with more news and information. Now, as you know, we signed R.C. Collins to a hosting deal. Herb Sewell has been in negotiation with us as well, and we're going to talk to Herb. Should we have Herb Sewell filling in for us when we're on vacation or when we're under the weather? I don't know. I have to be honest with you. I think it's possibly a bad idea. But we'll find out. We'll talk to Herb Sewell. We come back. The world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth.
You've got to be kidding me. You're not going
to
have him.
The Phil
talking
Henry Show.
Talking to him, filling in on your show? That's what I think about that.
Hold on. Hi, welcome back, Phil Henry Show. We have been talking on our program here about, we actually were talking about the man that set the record for the highest elevation that a human being has parachuted from. Remember, Felix Baumgartner was his name. I believe he was an Austrian. It happened in 2012. You remember we covered it, as did a great many other media outlets. And this man, Mr. Baumgartner, if you saw the video, it was quite impressive, and it was a moment that I thoroughly enjoyed, just the daring do of these people. And when I say these people, I think of all of these guys that do these things, whether it's free falling from 118,000 feet, not free falling, but there is a certain amount of that's a free fall, and then you parachute the rest of the way. Whether it's setting some kind of a speed record, whether it is traveling around the world in a hot air balloon, and all of this stuff to me is fascinating. Jeff Dowder, a professor of mechanical physics at Caltech, has joined us. I wanted to ask you, Jeff, and by the way, how are you doing tonight?
I'm sorry?
How are you doing tonight? I'm a little fatigued here. It's been a long week, so I'm stumbling over my words. How are you?
No, I'm fine. I'm fine. You have to watch that, Mr. Henry, because if you have sleep deprivation, there's a loss of muscular control. And the reason why I'm sort of interested in how you did that is, if you ever saw a movie called The Bounty, in the movie the Captain Bly character, played by Anthony Hopkins, is set adrift, as what was happening to Captain Bly. And anyway, when they finally landed on land, and Captain Bly was he got out of this launch, and he'd been in that launch for a long time. He'd been in that launch for like 3 months, after they were set adrift. And anyway, when he got out of the launch and he walked onto the deck, he was met by two Dutch soldiers, because New Kupan was a Dutch colony down in the New Guinea area, okay? And the first thing he said was, "My name is William Bly." So in other words, he couldn't even say his name because his tongue was swelled up. Mr. Henry, and
really?
Yeah, and
I mean, is that a matter of historical record, or was that just in the movie?
Well, I mean, it was in the movie, but it stands a reason, because if you're out on a boat for 3 months and you're not talking to anybody, and then all of a sudden you got to talk to somebody, you're probably going to go, "Oh yeah, stuff isn't going to work too good."
Well, he was talking to people. He had his crewmates there.
Well, that's true. I mean, he had a launch that had members of the Bly or whatever the ship or the Bounty. I mean, but after a while, they were so tired and they hadn't eaten anything. They probably didn't have a whole lot to say to each other. Just like, hi. Or I mean, I don't know what they said.
Well, what do you mean they said hi? What? They still have to sail the launch, don't they?
Well, yeah, they have to sail the launch. There's no record of what Bly said. I mean, there is a record that Captain Bly kept because he did keep,
Will you spit it out, man? I mean, I'm sorry. I don't mean to yell at you.
Well, no, he kept a log. He kept a log.
Kept a log. I bet he did.
Hey, man, I'm talking about a written log, you know.
All right, hold on for a minute. Bud, would you knock it off?
What? I know, Jeff. We kid about it all the time.
Yeah, that's fine, but I'm interviewing him right now.
Yeah, this is an interview, man, okay? And when you come over to Mint Canyon, and Bo, by the way, said you, hey, Bo said you took that pipe, so I don't know whether...
I didn't take any pipe. I tore my left arm. I tore my left in the bathroom.
Where?
On a toilet tank.
He says it's on a toilet tank, man. Okay.
Excuse me, guys. Can you work this out later? Because we're having an interview.
Yeah, you're right, Mr. Henry. I'm sorry. So, Captain Bly kept a log, and in the log he said that John Smith, who was the steward on the Bounty, had said to Bly, if I die, use my flesh as food, you know, to feed the other guys. And Captain Bly said to him, no, that's not going to happen. You know, we're not going to, you know, I'm not going to, you know, no way, you know. You know, I mean, I'm sure he didn't say no way, but he probably said whatever the 18th century version of no way was, which was probably, maybe it was no way. I don't know.
I doubt it. Okay.
Yeah, he could have said no way.
I'm sure he said something like, no, we're not going to do that.
Yeah, all right. I mean, whatever the version of no way was.
Well, what do you suppose that... Are we actually going to discuss this?
Who cares what the version of no way was?
I'm talking about what the colloquial version was of no way.
What?
In the 18th century, man.
Yeah, what'd they say? Did they go, no? No?
Yeah, maybe they said no. God.
I'm sorry, Mr. Aaron. I was just trying to, you know, I wanted to make it authentic and everything.
No, it's authentic enough. Thank you. All right, so, what's interesting to me, though, Jeff, is that, Captain Bly, you said, had a swollen tongue when he got off of the launch and was on the dock, and he was being, escorted by these Dutch soldiers. You say that it is very likely that that was an accurate portrayal in the film.
Yeah, I think it was, because, again, if you're spending months at sea, you haven't had anything to drink, there's very little water. I mean, there's ocean water, but what would that do? You drink that, and you're not supposed to do that. I mean, there's a lot of water around, you know.
Yeah, I've always wondered about that. How can a guy die of thirst if there's water everywhere?
Because salt water is poison.
Good God, you don't know that?
What do you mean?
If you drink salt water, it's like drinking poison, okay? The body will not absorb that. In point of fact, it will hasten your thirst and dehydrate you, and you lose your mind. What happens to the human body if it doesn't get water is not very pretty. And for Captain Bly... He apparently rationed the water, right, Jeff?
Yeah, they rationed it out, and they rationed it out, and they rationed it out. And they finally, you know, they just rationed it out. But I'll tell you something. There was a fight that broke out. A lot of stuff happened on that launch before they finally got it in there. But then Bly said when he got off the boat.
You're all going, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I heard that, man. That's pretty funny.
Okay. Did you guys get your laugh?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, I mean, I'm saying Bly got off the boat. He goes, my name is Calderon. If his tongue was swollen up, as I suspect it was, and as other historians do indeed feel that it were, and, okay, if then this is what he would have said, because we do know that the Dutch soldiers have told us the first words out of his mouth were, my name is William Bly, I'm a British naval officer, and I'm reporting an act of piracy. That was the first thing that William Bly said to the Dutch soldiers that met him. But if he had not had no drink, if he had not had no water, it would have sounded like this.
Then the captain needed Bly.
I had the... Wait a minute. Well, I'm starting over again, Mr. Henry?
Yeah, fine. Go ahead.
What are you doing?
Hold on. Go ahead.
I'm showing you what William Bly did.
What he did or what he said?
Well, the way he sounded.
Yeah, the way he sounded if he had a swelled up tongue.
God.
So if he had a swelled up tongue, it would say, remember what he said. He said, my name is William Bly. Or no, he goes, my name is Lieutenant William Bly.
The dude's captain.
Would you shut up, bud? No, he wasn't a captain. He was a lieutenant. He had not made captain.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so he goes, my name is Lieutenant William Bly. I'm a British naval officer, and I have to report an act of piracy. That's what we know, he said. It would have sounded like this, having not had water for a long time.
But then they said that there's a dive, and the British naval officer, that I have to report an act of piracy.
And, you know, it stands to reason that the Dutch would have opened fire on him. But they didn't. And that speaks to the commanding presence.
Wait. Hold on. Why would the Dutch have opened fire on him?
Well, Mr. Henry, I think it only stands to reason.
By the way, that's your favorite phrase here so far, Professor Doubter.
Well, I'm sorry, but it does stand to reason. It only stands to reason that if a guy is standing in front of you and he's talking like he's got his, you know what I'm saying, like he's from a world where the tongue is three times bigger than ours.
From a world. So these Dutch soldiers are going to assume right away he's an alien?
Not an alien, no, man. But, I mean, they don't know what it is. And they're going to take precautionary measures in case the governor of the island is in route. You know, we do know that the Dutch had a governor down there.
Okay, fine. All right. So the fact that they didn't open fire on William Bly says what?
It says to me that William Bly had a very commanding presence. He also was a very reassuring presence. He probably is. Well, you guys are just going to laugh.
No, I'm not. We'll be right back. Hold on, please. World famous Phil Henry Show.
This is asinine, and I'm begging you, Phil, I'm asking you now to conclude this call.
I got him scheduled for a half hour. What do you want me to do? We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show.
You understand?
I know.
You're making an ass of yourself with this guy going.
Margaret, I know what he sounds like.
Phil Henry.
Hello, everyone. This is Margaret. Do you want me to?
Go ahead.
This is Margaret Gray. We're actually watching a show. The National Football League kicker, now retired, Jason Elam, and his trophy wife are out on a... what are you looking at?
What are you calling her a trophy wife for?
Because that's what she is. I'm going to start all over again. What's her name?
Well, her name's Tammy.
Oh, well, isn't that...
Margaret, I didn't know you were going to start ripping them.
No, I want to make a point. Jason Elam and his trophy wife, Tammy, oh my God, Tammy, are out here in Alaska, and they're looking for an island home. Isn't that nice? They're looking for a home that's got room for five children, a big kitchen. Yes, I'm sure, Tammy, that's what you want. A big kitchen, and now they're looking at all these different properties. Am I supposed to sit still for this garish display of wealth while people are eating out of garbage cans as they listen to this show? Your thoughts, Mr. Henry?
Well, no, you don't have to watch it, Mark. Number one, I don't know who's eating out of a garbage can while they're listening to this show. Number two, because times are tough, does that mean I'm supposed to begrudge Mr. Elam and his wife the opportunity to look at a beautiful home? Yeah, maybe some of us can't afford it. But I like to look inside. I like to see what's, you know.
You like to see what they're able to afford. Look at this. It has its own bait shack. What is that about? Then it's got a little walkway that goes up through the trees that I'm sure Tammy just insisted on. God, I hate her.
What do you hate her for?
Because this woman... Let me explain something, Phil, because this is something you and the men listening. This woman landed herself a football player. I'll bet you money she talks like that. Number two...
No, wait. There's people listening.
May I finish? Because I've got a point to make. So she goes to Bronco Stadium or wherever she went to meet this guy, and she did what she did, wink, wink, to land herself an NFL player. Now they're walking up through the trees, and she has herself everything she's ever... I think...
Well, Margaret, you know...
No, I'm going to quote Bob Green on Nostradamus. Swamp runnings...
God! I don't think you should begrudge people their good fortune. I really don't.
See, what's happened to you all of a sudden? You used to be fun. You used to be a guy that would sit there with me and badmouth these people right along with me. What's going on with you anyway?
I'm learning a little humility, okay? I'm learning a little humility. I'm learning how to let people have their success and not begrudge them that and not and say, wow, aren't you fortunate? I mean, look at how hard they work. They got, you know, someday maybe you, maybe I. Well, you and Frank are set up. What are you talking about?
I don't like the way she did it, okay?
Margaret, let me ask you a question. How did you do it any different?
You...
Oh!
Wow!
You just slapped me.
That's right.
Man, she slapped you in the face, man.
Yeah, you should call the police.
No, no. No, I won't. I'm not going to do it. Is Jeff still there? Jeff, you there? I'm sorry.
I heard the whole thing, man. Toby, yeah, 911. Toby's on the phone now. We probably have a cruiser out there probably pretty soon.
No. Don't have him call the cops. Don't have him call the cops.
Man, I just heard her slap you, Mr. Henry, and I'm out here listening on the radio, and I'm sure all of your listeners heard as well the crack of her hand on your, well, was it your butt?
It was my face.
Okay. I don't know what she did. It sounded to me like hand against butt flesh.
No, man, it wasn't hand on butt flesh. It was a face. I would have told you. I would have made sure you filming it.
Yeah, thank you very much for that. But, you know, I just think that in so many different ways, Mr. Henry, that was wrong and in so many different ways.
Okay, thank you. I'm trying to read a message. Hold on for a minute. Would you put him on hold? I'm trying to read a message here from, I can't open this up, Dan. So whatever message you sent me, you're going to have to send it again, I guess. Oh, here it is. This is interesting. I cannot open this message up to save my ass. How do you like that?
Well?
You slapped me in the face, okay?
You said that I did exactly what that swamp-running whore did to get my husband Frank, and no, I didn't.
You don't know what that woman did. You have no idea what that woman did to get what she got. All right, anyway, welcome back to the program, folks. Let me just get... You got a message that you're sending me. I can't read it, so do you want to send it to me again? Oh, here it is. Oh, here is the link. Thank you very, very much, Dan. This is the link, folks, to... this is the link. This is a cookie policy is what I've got here.
No, not that. This.
Oh, thank you. The Pursuits interview. Felix Baumgartner, the Austrian skydiver, talks about making the world's first... we're talking... there's a whole bunch of stuff that's going on right now. I've got on the line with me... Jeff Dowder, and we're talking about Mr. Baumgartner and the free fall. And Jeff, okay, we're talking about the free fall. Let's get back to that, okay, and forget about whether Margaret appreciates what the Elams are doing with their home.
I just think it's wrong that she slapped you across the facial area. And
did give a facial.
I didn't say she gave him a facial, man. I said she slapped him.
Never mind. Let's just talk about Mr. Baumgartner.
Mr. who?
Baumgartner, the guy that, the skydiver?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, when you said Baumgartner. Yeah. Well, Mr. Baumgartner, when you step out of the aircraft and you free fall, this guy, it was 4 minutes from the time he left the craft until the time that till he landed. Okay? I mean, that dude is a very, very quick flight, Mr. Henry, from the craft down to where he landed. Now, a group of us have gotten together, and we are targeting 2014, April 6th. I don't know what day of the week that is, and it probably doesn't make any difference when you're talking about skydiving from a high elevation. But we just picked April the 6th.
What is significant about that date?
What's significant about that date is, what's the date today?
I think it's April 6th, isn't it?
Yeah, well, so it's a year from now. I think that's why we did it. Or maybe not. I don't remember why we picked April.
Actually, today's the 5th.
So tomorrow's the 6th?
I mean, Saturday is the 6th. It is the 5th still on the West Coast. The rest of you guys, it's the 6th.
What?
Never mind, man. So the 6th is a Saturday.
All right, so next year it'll be a Sunday. So that's why, because Sunday, most of the guys will have the day off and we can go out and leap out of a capsule, okay, or leap out of the balloon.
Wait. So the guys have Sunday off so you can go up and leap out of a balloon?
Yeah.
Yeah, the people are working.
I'm sure that Baumgartner took that into consideration. What days does he have off?
What do you mean, what days does he have off? This is the guy's job, man. This is his job.
Well, it must be nice, man, but I got two other jobs I got to get to. So anyway, that's why we did that.
Now, you're going to try to break a record here, but it isn't going to be the record that of elevation necessarily, right?
Well, it'll be from 118,000 feet, but what we want to do is break the record of how long it took to get to the Earth. This guy, Baumgartner, wants me to believe that he broke the speed of sound, that his body at one point reached 843.6 miles per hour. Okay, you know, I mean, if that's what he says, that's what he said. He jumped from a height of 127,000 feet, 24 miles. He reached at a maximum speed of 843 miles an hour. He spent a total of 4 minutes and 20 seconds in free fall, including a 13-second flat spin, rocketing through temperatures as low as 70.9 below zero.
How much time did it take him to get to Earth?
If you're counting the free fall plus when the chute opened, probably, you know, 4 free fall. I mean, I don't know, you know.
Yeah, see, that's just it. I don't know how long it took him to get from the capsule down to the Earth.
Well, I mean, let's say it took, for instance, we know he was in free fall for 4 minutes.
Right, but then the chute opens, and how long is it going to take? What do you want, Margaret?
Are you looking at her? This woman doesn't believe how... She can't figure how lucky she is.
Are you still looking at the Elams, looking at this house?
Yes.
Forget it, will you? Go ahead.
What?
Nothing. Go ahead.
I'm looking at rainwater catchment system. Dig that.
Yeah, this is... Can you believe it? So she's going to live in a beautiful home, and she's going to wash her hair and other parts of her body with recycled rainwater... Remind me, if I ever get invited to that house, not to accept a glass of water.
Why?
I'm not drinking a glass of water that she was using about 5 minutes before to wash her you-know-what.
Hey, that's a really good point.
Yeah, it is a good point.
Yeah, that's a good point. Go ahead, sir. We're talking about the free fall.
Yeah, 4 minutes of free fall. I don't know how long it took, but we're going to try to break that record. And the way we're going to try to break that record is by weighting our body. When I say our body, I mean the body of Billy Ketchum, who's going to be the host subject. It won't be me because I have a fear of heights. It'll be Billy Ketchum, who is the nephew of Toby Bo, as well as the son of Toby's sister, Arissa Bo. And anyway...
Does this kid, Billy Ketchum, does he have any experience as a skydiver?
Toby's going to take him to Lake Elsinore this summer, and they're going to do a lot of jumps. They're going to do a lot of jumps.
Okay, so the answer is no.
Well, I mean, how much experience does this other guy have?
So the answer is no. All right, thanks, Jeff. Good luck.
Yeah, well, don't you want to hear about Howard?
All right, so let's take a break. We'll be right back. The world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Margaret, you get an eyeful of this five-bedroom home, and you're feeling really crappy because Jason Elam's gold-digging little wife is going to be living there?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I speak for a lot of women when I say, you know, you swamp-running...
Swamp-running slut?
Yes. You go down to the Bronco game, and you go, ooh... And you stick your butt out, and this poor farm boy hasn't got a chance. Next thing you know, he's spending millions so that you can have a rainwater catchment system to thoroughly scrub your blank. Thank you.
God. Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch.
Well, it's true.
The Phil Henry Show.
It's true.
listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
World-famous Phil Henry Show. I want to get on the line here. We got Lloyd Bonafide. Lloyd spent a little bit of time in Alaska because I want to get his take on the this Buying Alaska show. That's what you're watching here, Margaret. And you're looking at a gorgeous home. There's no question it's a gorgeous home. It's sitting right on the water there. But keep in mind that these homes don't have water. In other words, they don't have plumbing. They don't have the kind of central heat that you and I may think of when we own a home here in, you know, the lower 40 or lower 48, I should say.
Well, what are you talking about? They don't have heat.
Well, here's Lloyd. Lloyd, did you have a home in Alaska?
First of all, good evening to you, Phil, and good evening to you, Margaret. How are you?
Lloyd, I'm doing fine.
First of all, let's start at the beginning. Before I went into the Navy, and you know I'm a Navy veteran, Phil, before I went into the Navy, I spent a couple of summers in Alaska doing some timber removal, doing a little bit of logging, not much.
The logging.
What was that?
Oh, hold on for a minute. Don't do it, bud, because...
Is that that kid? Because if I hear that kid, it's not going to be pretty.
I just said all you said was you were said logging.
Yeah, so I said logging. So what?
Wait a minute. Don't get engaged. The two of you guys, please, okay? Just don't... I don't want to start with this. I'd rather that we just talk.
Hey, let me tell you what, Mr. Henry. I'm ready to talk, but if I hear that kid... make these cracks about logging, because I know what he's I know what he's saying. He's trying to make the reference that I know what he's saying. He's making.
Well, Lloyd, don't you don't have to play into his hand.
No, but you don't understand. He's making a reference to a log being a bowel movement.
Yes, we know that.
Oh, you do know it.
Yes, we know that.
And did you hear him laugh just then?
Yeah, I heard him. I'm going to belt you. I did it yesterday. I'll do it again. You want that again, bud?
No.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Henry, because if you don't, I will. And I'll tell you something, young man. When I get it, you'll get it. You remember what the newspapers used to say? As soon as I get it, you get it. Well, guess what? If I get it, you will get it.
Get what?
If I get the information that you are pissing me off, you'll get it.
All right, we're all done with that. Now let's talk about Alaska.
Yes, so Alaska, I spent two summers up there doing lumber removal, a little bit of logging, and lumber removal. And keep in mind, Phil, this was before the oil discoveries, but there was a great deal of shale. And there were oil pumps and oil rigs up there. We did a little bit of rough digging too.
In the 40s, huh?
In the 40s, that's right. Make a long story short, I spent some time. Now let me tell you about living in Alaska. You are absolutely right when you say that there's no running water. You have to collect the rainwater. You then need to circulate that through the home. Now, if you've got some beautiful young wife like this guy's got here that I'm looking at on TV, and she thinks she's going up to a fairyland of Disney, you know, with a lot of Disney characters that are going to greet her and wipe her, excuse me for saying this, wipe her rear end for her, she's in for the shock of her life because it is hard living up there.
But the home they're looking at, it's a beautiful home.
Yeah, it's a beautiful home with no real... it's a beautiful home if you get enough rainwater in that thing. And if you will accept the fact that Tinkerbell isn't going to be there to wipe you when you use a toilet that you may have to prime before you can flush.
Well, can I ask a question?
Go ahead.
Lloyd, you're talking about... the easy living that a lot of us city slickers have when you get up to Alaska... It's difficult. Now, you mentioned the rain. What about the heating?
Heating, I was getting to that. Heating is done with either oil, propane, or, as Mr. Norcross just said...
Talk about Northcraft.
I'm sorry. Dan Northcraft said heating is done with the... what do you want to call? The wood fire.
Now, some of these places do have jacuzzi, but in order to heat up a jacuzzi, you've got to have some way of heating it up. I don't know if, what are you going to do. And if you take your little girlfriend, and she spent the training camp of the Denver Bronco walking around with her pants off or whatever, she, and then you tell her you're going to go into the jacuzzi and it's not warm enough, she's going to squeal like a stuck pig under a gate, and you're going to be out one girlfriend. And these lodges, by the way, Phil and Margaret and Dickman, $1.8 billion.
$1.8 million, huh?
$1,825,000. That's right.
Talking with Lloyd Bonafide about some of these Alaska properties. You guys are speaking in a very disparaging way about Mr. Elam's wife, which I don't think is entirely fair.
Well, look, I agree with Margaret in the sense that, you know, don't tell me that if she moves up to Alaska, that girl had better cinch it up and show what she's got, because if it isn't a bear that's going to... You saw what happened to that one guy. He got a... See what happened to him? He got eaten by a bear, and then, for good measure, the bear snacked on his girlfriend, too. You know? So if Jason Elam goes up and buys himself a house in Alaska, and some bear snacks on him and the little groupie, you know, they'll go... let me tell you something, my friend. They'll go up there, and the only thing they'll find will be Jason Elam's cowboy hat and his girlfriend's cowboy hat, four pairs of four separate boots, and that's it. And the hats will be sitting on the boots, because a lot of times they...
Okay, hold on for a minute. We're getting into some... You're talking about being eaten by a bear.
Yes, this is irresponsible.
I'm telling you, it's happened.
And then the hat will be sitting on the boots.
I'm telling you, as God is my witness, that there's the story of the Kuchner twins. They found two cowboy hats parked on boots.
And the bear ate them. The bear ate them.
The bear ate them? Get a load of him. That was my wife.
The bear ate them.
The bear ate the people, not the boots. I didn't say the bear ate them. The bear... Hey, I'm Phil Hendry. And the bear eat them.
That's very, very cute, Lloyd.
All right, see you later, Lloyd.
Oh, just because I got one offer on you, you're going to hang?
So, moral of the story, if you want to buy a house in Alaska, there's no water, no heat, the bear will eat you. And especially if you're an NFL player, your groupie gold-digging wife hasn't got a prayer. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
I didn't say anything of the sort. You're just trying to make me look like a yahoo.
Phil Hendry. Shores, El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Why does that say Phil Hendry Show starts at 9:15, bud?
Oh, get the wrong...
He has the wrong graphic up there.
Got a graphic on our video cast, folks. We're just going to have to get rid of that. Not that anybody is fooled by it, I don't think. We have long since passed the 9:15 p.m. mark. All right, so anyway, welcome to the program, and it's now officially Saturday. So we're all into the Saturday mode, and it is a beautiful thing to behold. That's for ding-dang sure. Now, I would like to make this suggestion for you. Sometime this weekend, you pick up a backstage pass to the Phil Hendry Show website, because to be perfectly honest with you, this is where all the entertainment's going when it comes to radio. Whether it's my show or others, anything that is staying on radio is going to have some kind of a digital presence. And what is on digital is going to be a lot more interesting than what's on radio. So I would suggest you get a backstage pass to our website, philhendryshow.com. You'll have 15 years worth of radio shows to listen to, as well as the current podcast. We're going to be starting two more podcasts by summer. We've got a one-man show that we'd like to keep you updated on. Lots of things happening. Just go to philhendryshow.com, sign up for a backstage pass. You get a month, 6 months, a year. And for $9.99 a month, And, of course, you get a discount over the period of 6 months and a year. You're getting, as I say, full radio shows going back 15 years, classic radio stuff, archival stuff. And, by the way, the podcast is now a premium podcast. The last 25 are, of course, available to everybody, but from 1 to 119 or 120, I think, that's all premium material. So with a backstage pass, you have access to all of that as well. PhilHenryShow.com is the place to be. All right.
To be or not to be?
That is the question.
Very good. That's Shakespeare.
Yeah, I know that was Shakespeare. Now, who said this? Who said this?
Okay.
Oh, well,
you don't know any Shakespeare.
Do you?
Yeah. To be or not to be.
Well, we already did that one.
Here's one. Now is the winter of our discontent made glorious summer by this son of York.
Who's that?
That was Shakespeare.
I'm not familiar with it.
No, I'm not either.
Well, it's Shakespeare, okay? It's Richard III, man. We were just talking about Richard III. Richard III from Shakespeare.
And it's very interesting. People will think that when that speech was written by Shakespeare, that Richard III actually said that. No, he didn't. There's no record that he said anything quite like that.
Yeah, it was just Shakespeare imagining Richard III as he was giving that speech. I don't know if it was on the occasion of him dying. I don't know when the hell it was, but why are we talking about Shakespeare? I want to talk about the National Football League and what your coach will have to say to the kids if any of the NFL players say they're gay. So
yes, this is something that they didn't worry about in Shakespeare's time, did they?
I don't know. How did they deal with gay people in Shakespeare's time? How did they deal with gay people? Well, we know that at one time being gay was actually a norm, or if you will, it was part of an accepted part of society. Roman society, we know, tolerated homosexuality, even among its soldiers, among its senators, among its generals. It was considered to be, you know, acceptable. There were some societies, and so here we are in the 21st century in America, and this is something that we are coming to terms with, the reality that there are gay people and lesbians, and the fact that, you know, what do you say to young people? How are we talking to kids about the new realities of life, whether they're sexual, whether they're social, etc.? Now, according to at least one source, if NFL players say they're gay, youth coaches will, quote, have to rethink manliness. This is at least the thoughts of one writer and the research he's done for Forbes. It seems like the question regarding whether a male athlete in a major pro sport will come out as gay is when, not if. In the last few weeks, CBSSports.com has reported that at least one pro football player would be coming out. The president of the NFL's player union has said his group is prepping for an openly gay player. And in an interview with the Baltimore Sun recently, released player and marriage equality activist Brendan Ayabadeo said groundwork is being laid for up to four players to come out simultaneously. And if that happens...
Well, is this man gay?
Brendan... I ought to be able to pronounce this guy's name. Brendan Ayanbadeo. No, he is a marriage equality activist, but he has not come out gay himself. He said the groundwork is being laid for up to four players to come out simultaneously. If that happens, the definition of what makes someone manly in sport is going to be in for some adjustment.
I'll say they won't be able to say that a gay guy can't play football.
Well, that's true. How many gay boxers? The fact of the matter is, folks, you know, you can put off the inevitable for only so long. It is a reality that gay people have been with us and a part of our societies and a part of our population and a part of our armies and a part of our politics and a part of our lives since the beginning of time. And pretending like they don't exist hasn't worked. Trying to stick them in nut houses or castrating them or giving them electroshock, that hasn't worked. Telling them to just shut up and go away or don't ask, don't tell, that ain't worked. You know, they're there. And so what do you do? you know, the Christian, I don't want to go down this, I don't want to religion bash here, but this whole go to some sort of a camp where you can learn how not to be gay. Do you believe in that, bud?
What?
Do you believe that a guy can be trained not to be gay?
You're putting me on the spot.
That's right, ma'am.
I don't know. I no.
Yeah, but you're only saying no because you're afraid of being yelled at.
What do you think?
I think maybe you can.
Man, you're a homophobe, man.
Hold on. That's not the way to go about this, okay? I don't want to, you know, start calling people names. You think a guy can go to some Christian camp and learn how not to be gay?
I don't know. I mean, if I said yeah, then you're going to yell. If I say no, then you're going to say I'm a liar.
No, I'll accept your answer.
I don't know. Probably not.
Oh, that's a bunch of... You're just saying that.
Margaret, would you give the kid a break, okay? Maybe he hasn't thought about it. Maybe you haven't given it much thought, huh?
I don't know. I mean, like I said, you're going to yell if I say the wrong thing.
No, I'm not going to yell. I swear to God, I won't let anybody yell at you. If you say that you think gay people can go to some camp and be changed, I will accept that. And hopefully I'll be able to change your mind, because I don't agree with you, but, you know.
What if I change your mind?
Yeah, fat chance, ma'am.
Are you kidding me? You changing my mind? That's about as likely as the sun turning into a big fat...
What?
I don't know what.
The sun turning into a big fat what?
A big fat, you know, testicle. I don't know.
Anyway.
God.
I don't pressure me into coming up with an answer.
Fine, we won't. So what do you think?
I think that you can go to, well, a guy told me he knows of a guy that did.
He does. He knows of a guy that went to one of these camps and he was changed?
Well, I mean, he thinks he was, but he's not sure.
Yeah, there you go. You're not sure. You know, there's no real, I don't personally think you can do it, but if you can, if it is possible, I don't think it's been proved yet. You know?
Well, he said he saw the guy on TV. The guy's all, yeah, I like girls. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I don't know.
Well, you believe that?
I don't know.
Well, it's okay, bud. That's okay. You know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you you're a dumbass or you're wrong. That's how you think. I mean, that's where we got to start. We got to start with honesty here, you know? If that's how you think, that's how you think, you know?
Why are you asking me? Why don't you ask Robert?
Because I know how he thinks and I know how you think, and you are the guy here in the crew that's got all these kind of whacked out thoughts, you know?
Well, I'm not racist or anything, like you guys say.
Yeah, you got a black girlfriend. How come you're, like yesterday you said, how come I dare talk to a white man like that?
Because I just was seeing if you'll get pissed.
You got to knock that stuff off, because people think you're a racist. You know that, don't you?
No.
They do. So you got to knock it off. All right. Let's take a break and get back here to this article we're reading about what are they going to do if a gay player comes out? What do you say to kids? This is a very interesting article, I think. And I think it's one that that should be read, and I'm sure that everybody who has a kid, whether they be gay or straight, would certainly encourage us to understand and to begin to speak the language and begin to communicate with our kids about these things. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch.
You can?
The Phil Hendry Show.
I think you can, because look, you were able to do it.
Man, I want to kick you.
So the question here on the table is, you know, what do you say to a kid as these NFL players start coming out? The feeling is in the league, the feeling is among the players, and has been expressed in a couple of instances. We mentioned Brendan Iyanbadeo, who is a marriage equality activist and was a player for the Baltimore Ravens. He said the groundwork is being laid for at least four players to come out simultaneously in the National Football League. So the time is right, they feel, for gay players to begin to make their presence known. The atmosphere is right. So what do you say to kids? And there have been some, you know, things that have been stated. In dribs and drabs, former players and other men, including at least one pro bowler in the sporting world, have come out. Leagues have gotten more comfortable with the concept of homosexuality, as have their players, who have been more open about their support of LGBT-related initiatives. At least publicly, leagues and teams are acting less kindly than they used to toward anyone associated with being anti-gay. Look at San Francisco 49ers cornerback Chris Culliver, widely reviled by the public and his own team for a radio interview before the Super Bowl, in which he declared, "Ain't got no gay people on the team. They got to get up out of here if they do. Can't be with that sweet stuff. Can't be in the locker room. Nah." Culliver underwent sensitivity training and is now volunteering with an LGBT youth support group. So, you know, some guys they ain't got the message. Now, why is that important? Because if a guy like that is talking that way, and then all of a sudden a guy comes into the locker room and says, "I'm gay," or the team says, "We're hiring a gay, player," in much the same way as in the late 40s, the Brooklyn Dodgers said, "Well, I hate to break the news to you guys, but we have a black player now, and you're going to have to learn to get along with him."
You know, they didn't have any sensitivity training back when the Jackie, and what was the man's name?
Jackie Robinson.
Jackie Robinson.
Yeah, did they have sensitivity training?
You kidding me? They didn't have anything like that.
No, they didn't. And they had like St. Louis Cardinals, and they had a bunch of crackers.
That's racist.
Will you just knock it off, bud? No, they didn't have sensitivity training. You crazy? I mean, Jackie Robinson was put through the grind, man. That cat, every ballpark they went to, he was called the N-word. People were screaming at him. Some of the teams didn't want to play the Dodgers. They didn't come out of the dugout, you know. No, sensitivity training? Are you kidding? That guy, that poor man was, and he was told by Branch Rickey, he said, "I don't care what they do, you got to keep your mouth shut."
Well, you're kidding.
No, he was told, "I don't care what they do and what they call you, keep your mouth shut, take the high road, I don't want you engaging any of the fans or any of the players, don't be baited by them." That's what Branch Rickey told him, and that's exactly what Jackie Robinson did. He kept his mouth shut. He just let his baseball ability speak for itself and made believers out of everybody, and the rest is history. While it appears it's going to happen someday, no one has come out. The issue may not be merely the feared negative attention, but the attention in general that would come from being a major sport's first actively playing gay man. If indeed there are multiple players on multiple teams coming out in a coordinated effort, one that is likely to include discussions with management, coaches, and teammates about how to handle the media attention, then that at least spreads the impact so only one player isn't feeling the full effect of being the first gay. So that's a pretty good way of doing it, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, they'll just say there's four gays.
So?
So they'll say these are the first four gays that came out.
It'll be easier, they're thinking, bud, than if they have one guy that's got to take the heat. You know, like we were saying with Jackie Robinson being the first black player.
Well, I don't see how that's going to help, because unless they're on the same team. If there were four black players that came out when Jackie Robinson came out, and Jackie Robinson was gay?
No, Jackie Robinson was black.
Well, then what's he coming out?
He came out black.
Yeah, he came out black.
Margaret's right. What do you mean came out black?
Oh. Well, what's wrong with that?
Well, all of a sudden, hey, I want you to know something. I'm actually black.
Yeah.
Are you nuts or something, bud? Think about it. Think long and hard about it, bud.
Bud.
No. Let him figure it out. Do you understand?
If Jackie Robinson come out gay, that's good, right?
No, we're not talking about coming out gay. Jackie Robinson was black.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's right. He came out black.
Right. How can you come out black?
Are you kidding me or something? You look in a mirror and there you are. You just came out black.
No, man. No. Look.
No, let him figure. Excuse me, I belched. Do you mind?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
Too late now, I guess.
Well, you belched. Never mind. Think about it, bud. Jackie Robinson coming out black.
Yeah, and he did come out black.
How did he come out black?
When he was born, he come out black.
Well, that's true. He came out black, but...
What do you mean he came out black? His mother was black, his father was black. It's not like, you know, they were mixing a chocolate shake in there and it just happened to come out black.
Well, I mean...
What we're saying here is...
Phil.
No, not Phil. No, I'm not letting him figure it out. How do you come out black?
Well, you're saying about gay people coming out.
Gay people.
You see, you try to explain to an idiot, you'll never get anywhere.
Let's take a phone call. 877-877. Okay, here's Dr. Sadler now. Dr. Sadler, you've been listening to this?
Yeah, Phil, I have been listening. Well, let me take a crack at it. Hey, Bud, it's Dr. Sadler. How are you?
Yeah, Dr. Sadler, I'm good. I don't need to talk to a head shrinker.
No, I don't think you do either, but I wanted to take a crack at it.
What do you mean, a crack?
I mean, I want to take a shot at it. It's got nothing to do with crack. I said I want to take a crack at it, as an old saying, like I want to take a shot at it.
Okay.
But if I am gay, well, I better not say I'm gay, because you, for the longest time, you've made fun of the way I talk. Do you think I'm gay?
I mean, I don't think you are, but you say that you're not.
I am not gay. I'm married, and I'm married to a very lovely woman.
Right, but the way you talk is funny.
Okay, so let's start right there. You think because I talk the way I talk, I got to be gay, right?
Yeah, but I know you had an accident and your tongue got hurt.
Right, exactly. It was a lion taming accident, and the tongue got injured. Okay. Do you think gay people have crippled tongues or something?
Well, it seems like that. Yeah.
Oh God.
Oh, hold on, Phil. Hold on. What do you mean it seems like that?
I mean, I'm saying gay people do. It seems like just, what do you call, feminism?
Are you talking about feminism?
Yeah, but only with guys.
Okay, you're saying that guys that have feminism, if I'm hearing you correctly, have injured tongues.
Well, they all go, you know, like, fey there, like that.
Yeah, you're talking about like lisping.
You're talking about Lisbon.
No, lisping.
No, he was. You're not talking about Portugal.
No, I'm not talking about Portugal. I'm talking about lisping.
Yeah, when they go listen.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I wanted to be psychological and patient, and I wanted to take my time and try to work through this with you, Bud, as a voice of reason and sanity. But I'm so, you know, you just pissed me off.
Okay, that's fantastic, man. Way to take that call, huh?
Well, I know you want to talk to a psychologist.
Yeah, he's a psychologist, all right. You know, by the way, I'm reading all these Scientology books. I don't know why. They're not Scientology books. It's like I'm reading the one Going Clear, which is a history of Scientology in Hollywood. I just finished Inside Scientology. For some reason, I just find it fascinating. Just find it fascinating. But one of the things about Scientology is they don't believe in psychiatry. They don't believe in psychology. They believe, in fact, it's evil, and psychiatry is evil, and it's led mankind down the road to ruin. When I listen to Dr. Sadler,
you feel like you're a Scientologist.
Yeah, pretty much. You got it. Although I'm not ready to indict the whole thing.
I bet Dr. Sadler being a Scientology.
He's not a Scientologist. I said that he's a psychologist, and he's probably the guy that they're thinking of when they say, don't go to a psychologist.
Yeah, well, he sounds like a nutcase, you know.
Exactly, yeah.
But I'm not all psychologists like that.
Yeah, you think he's Scientology?
Would you knock it off with, no, I said, I don't think he's Scientology. We'll be right back. God, world, is that him?
Yeah, I didn't say. Hold on.
I am not Scientologist. I've never been a Scientologist. I wiped my rear end with Scientology.
Thank you very much, Dr. Sadler. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show. Bud?
Didn't do anything wrong.
Then L. Ron Hubbard can kiss me.
Phil Henry.
Famous Phil Henry Show every night here till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, and it is Saturday all across the beautiful land of ours here, the U.S. of A. from the El Pacifico, and of course our website is philhenryshow.com, And we encourage you to get a backstage pass and join us for our live video cast of our show each and every night, our pre-show each and every night. And also on the weekends, we occasionally show a movie or two, and we've got another Saturday night at the movies tonight.
What's the movie going to be?
It'll be some science fiction, some whacked-out thing. The most popular one so far has been Diary of a Nudist.
Yeah, a lot of people like that because they obviously had very beautiful girls in that.
Well, let me tell you something. I mean, that Diary of a Nudist was, it ostensibly was about a nudist camp, but there were some beautiful chicks in that movie.
Do you think about a nude camp?
No, I don't think it was about a nudist camp at all. I think it was what they were able to get away with in those days in terms of movies, showing nude women or nude guys. If you said it was about a documentary about a nudist camp, you could get away with it. So that's what this Doris, what was her name? Doris Wishman, I think was her name, who started filming these nudie movies, as they call them. All right, Mavis Leonard joins us, Robert's aunt, and we're going to talk a little bit about the old days. We mentioned there was no sensitivity training when Jackie Robinson came out, because that's what they're discussing here with the openly gay players eventually coming out and declaring that they are gay. How will they be treated? We live in a much more enlightened time, and that's good, but Mavis, you were not living in such a time, were you?
I would say I was not living in such a time, Mr. Henry. There were a very hard time for black people, and I'd imagine maybe worse for a gay one, you know. But there was no sensitivity training at all.
So for Jackie Robinson, there wasn't, and he just had to take it as it came, huh?
Yeah, that's about the only chance you had. I mean, but it was the same for everybody, you know. And I had to deal with, there was no sensitivity training for me when I declared that I was black. And I had done laundry for this woman for a year.
What do you mean when you declared you were black?
Well, I felt that if Jackie Robinson broke a color line officially, I wanted to tell this white woman that I worked for that I'm black now. Because I was a teenager when Jackie Robinson, he come out and played on the Brooklyn Dodgers, you know.
Yeah.
And I saw Jackie Robinson play on spring training. I went with my uncle to the game, saw Jackie Robinson, and very proud time to see him. And I said, I'm gonna cross the color line when it comes to doing laundry. My uncle said, you know, get in and out of the sun because you sound like a black version of Gracie Allen. Well, he said, you know.
A black version of Gracie? In other words, you sounded dopey.
Yeah, he said, I sounded dope. I said, I'll show you how dopey I sound. You want to see dopey? I said, keep an eye on me. Watch this. And the next day, I went to the lady's house, and I said, Mrs. Brandchild is the name. Mrs. Brandchild, Virginia Brandchild. I'll never forget. She's a nice lady, but she thought she could go to the bathroom and it was going to smell like Chanel No. 5. And I said to her, you can keep on thinking that way and keep on thinking that way, but everyone you pinch off, well, I better not say.
Yeah, can we move past that? So anyway, you came out, you crossed the color line in your own way.
Yes, I did. I'm watching your video cast, Mr. Henry, and you're wagging that right hand or that left hand around like if your wrist gets any limper.
Sorry.
You all just, you know. But look, Mr. Henry, in all seriousness, I said to this lady, I said, Jackie Robinson, come out. He's a black man. He declared he's black.
Can I gotta interrupt you here, okay?
Why do you keep interrupting people?
Phil, what are you interrupting her for?
I'm gonna interrupt her. She says, Jackie Robinson declared he's black. What is it with you guys? He didn't declare anything. He just stood there and said, I'd like to play baseball. It was quite obvious he was black.
Yes, I'm saying that it was, Mr. Henry. I'm not saying nothing different.
Well, you guys are saying you declared that he was black. You crossed the color line.
Yes, I did cross the color line because everybody was very inspired by Jackie Robinson trying to say.
You worked for this lady for how long?
I worked, Miss Brandchild?
Yeah.
I started working for her when I was 10 years old.
And that would have been 19 when?
1944.
Okay. Now Jackie Robinson, 1948, and you're what?
I'm 16 years old.
Okay, and now you declare you're black.
Yes. I'd worked for her for the previous 4 years or whatever it was. And now I said, now Jackie Robinson declared, he said, take a look, you know, this ain't burnt cork. And I said, Mrs. Brandchild, my name, and I told her, you know, my name is Mavis Elderberry, which was my maiden name. It wasn't really my maiden name. My maiden name was Bortman, but Elderberry sounded more, you know, it sounded less Jewish. So
Wait, hold on for a minute, okay?
You don't understand? My aunt said her maiden name was Bortman, but it's a German name, right?
Yeah, it was German, but a lot of people said it sounded Jewish, and I said, I already got 1 foot in it. Why do I got to put the other one in? So I changed my maiden name to Elderberry. And my middle name I changed to Screwcap as a joke, because nobody ever going to... My name's Mavis.
Screwcap.
Right, for a Screwcap Elderberry wine. So anyway...
Are you kidding me? What kind of a joke is that?
Margaret, well, I will thank you to keep your nose out of my business.
You're here telling everyone your business. I'm asking a question.
Well, you're just going to have to get in line because I'm telling my story right now.
All right, hold on. Go ahead, Mavis. Margaret, just back off, will you?
Well, what's she talking about, Screwcap?
That was a joke, I said. Now, turn that TV down. Robert, I got your cousin over here tonight, Stu Vaughn, okay?
Hey, tell him I said hi, will you?
Yeah, Robert says hi. Turn that garbage down, will you? I don't give a damn what you want. All right. So anyway, I said to this lady, I said, I now openly declare that I'm crossing the color line. I'm a black woman. And she looked at me like I just escaped from a lunatic farm, you know. And I said, what you looking at, Mrs. Brandchild? She said, you must just come out of a nut hatch because of the nonsense you're talking. So I said, is that right? She said, yeah, you declare that you're black, ha, 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 and all that kind of nonsense. Then she went inside, made a tuna fish sandwich, and she had herself a Coca-Cola, and she had a cottage cheese and lay down and take a nap. Now, I'm doing her laundry, and I put witch hazel in the panties, because witch hazel make you itch. Because that was my way of paying her back for laughing at me when I said I'm coming out as a black woman. Because, you know, she called them colored.
Now, all right, let's stop for a minute. You put witch hazel in her panties?
Yeah, because that'll make them itch.
Because that'll make her itch.
That's right. Then I went down, I got my husband-to-be, with Fruit Bon, which is Robert's uncle, and he had a Browning 8 camera. So I put the witch hazel in her panties. I stood around the corner with a Browning 8, and she got dressed, and she's going to go downtown and go window shopping. And I followed her downtown, and I got about, I'd say a half hour of Browning 8 millimeter of her reaching up under her dress and scratching every 3 feet. And I'm telling you, she got 1 foot up on a brick wall. Well, what you laughing at?
Well, what do you think?
She had 1 foot up on a brick wall. At one point, she had 1 foot up on a brick wall.
So this is the childish way that you...
That's not child, Mr. Henry. I'm going to tell you something right now. That was a very benign action, considering what had been done to my people for so many years. And if this lady putting on some witch hazel line panties, well, good for her. But I caught her at one point. She sat down and put her elbows on her knees and just looked around and then went ahead and went to work again.
Okay. Well.
You about done with me?
Yeah, that's...
Well, that's the most disgusting story.
Oh, would you give it a rest, Margaret, before... Would you give it a rest to you before your ass gives out?
Are you going to let her talk to me like that?
Actually, yeah, it's pretty funny.
Before my ass gives out?
That's right. You are running your mouth and running your mouth and running your mouth. All of the energy it takes to run your mouth, there's no energy left for your ass. Your ass is just going to give out.
Yeah, I am going to quit on you.
That's right.
All three of you can rot. You can rot. You can drop into the dirt and rot.
Going off to the bathroom again.
That's right.
Well, Mr. Henry, that's how I dealt with it. And Mrs. Fairchild, she spent that whole summer itching and scratching. elbows on her knees, looking up at me and shaking her head that she didn't know I had anything to do with it. She looked at me like for sympathy and go, what the hell happened to me? I mean, something's just itching like a son of a B-word, you know. She went off to the doctor and got all kinds of creams and everything. Well, there I was the next Monday, putting a witch hazel in the panties again. Then she'd be walking down the street, put one leg up on a brick wall, had the other one. Guys start thinking, you know, what dock do you work at?
All right, well, Mavis, I got to get going. We got to take a break.
I'm looking at the clock. You still got a minute to go. I keep track of all that.
Well, I thank you, but I'll do it. Thank you very much. And you're very, very kind for sharing that, witch hazel. And fortunately, we don't have to do those things anymore.
Well, I do because there's a couple of women I work for. I still give them the W. I give them the W, yeah.
The W?
Yeah, I give them the witch hazel. A lot of times I'll give them what I call the cross finger, the W. I said, she's going to get the W tonight, and she keeps on giving me a hard time, telling me I got to do underwear and brassiere. I said, I'll do your brassiere. I'll line that with witch hazel. You'll be watching, walking down the street, opening your blouse up and going, God, man, why? Why me?
All right. Thanks very much. And do these women, did they ever suspect?
No, they thought they had poison ivy. And what I would do, and Mrs. Brandchild, she'd start reaching up. I'd go, you're going to need an ocean of calamine lotion. You'll be scratching like a hound. The minute you start to mess around, oh, you know, and she'd look at me and shake her head and say, ain't that the truth?
And she thought she had poison ivy and it was you with the witch hazel.
All along, yeah.
All right, Mavis Leonard with one of the more childish stunts.
Yeah, well, I think it was a pretty good idea back in those days.
Well, maybe it was. I don't know.
I don't. I think it was absolutely childish. And then she's singing Poison Ivy.
Yeah, that's pretty good, just to let them know.
So then when the lady started scratching, Mavis would be going, you're gonna need an ocean. We'll be right back. World-famous Phil Hendry Show here and philhendryshow.com. Thank you, Mavis. Robert, thank you for calling your aunt up. I appreciate that.
It's all right, Missouri. Anytime you want to do that.
Truth
let me know. Give
is
me a
our
heads
bitch.
Up.
The Phil Hendry Show.
Yes, I wanted to hear this song because I'm not familiar with the song he's talking about.
Poison Ivy is just it's a novelty hit. It was a novelty song that was done in the 50s by a group called the Coasters. And by novelty, I mean it was just a goofy song about getting poison ivy, I think. Did you find it?
Well, yeah, I found it by the Coasters, and I think that's the name of the group. But for some reason, it's not going to be allowed.
What do you mean it's not going to be allowed?
Well, I bought it, but then it also shows that I...
Never mind, Bud. Do you have it or don't you?
Yeah, I do.
All right, fine. Now, why can't we hear it? It's called Poison Ivy. It's by the Coasters. Where the hell is it, man? Let me see this thing.
Right there.
All right, so this is a song that was done by the Coasters, and it's, you know, it's about freaking Poison Ivy. You bought it twice, you jackball.
Yeah, because you said it hadn't bought it yet.
What do you mean, botted it?
Here it is. This is the Coasters. Is this the song?
Yeah, let me get...
I'll get my arm back on the phone. See the...
She comes on like a rose.
What the hell?
Everybody knows.
She comes on like a rose.
Margaret.
She'll get
well, listen
you
to this.
Touch. You can look
hey,
honey, you
is that the song?
Touch. Yeah, that there it is right there. That's the song, Poison Ivy. I sing that song every time that white woman come out of her house. That's it. Yeah. See, that song was made by those brothers because the white people tell you, and you stick witch hazel in the underwear, they'd be scratching at their you-know-what off. And this lady, this Mrs. Brandtower, said, you talking to me like I'm some kind of trash. I get done with you, you're going to be walking down the street itching and scratching like you're playing for it. Like you playing for the Kansas City Monarchs of the Negro League.
Late at night while you're sleeping, poison ivy comes a creeping around.
What does that mean?
Well, what it means is this lady's treating me like I'm garbage, so I'm going to treat her like I'm going to have her itching like she's on deck. She's on deck against Satchel Paige.
Talking to you, poison
now the Lord will make you rich.
Well, what is all that? This is one of the black songs. Is that it?
Yeah, that's what that is, Margaret. Good girl. It's one of the black songs. This is R&B, lady. Rhythm and blues.
The minute you start to mess around. Poison
ivy. Oh, and listen, they're all singing in tandem. There's a chorus. It's almost as if all of the black gardeners and butlers are going, ha-ha.
Yeah, that's about what's happening. All the black gardeners and butlers. You know something? In your next life, Margaret, you're going to come back, I think, as a black butler. I'll come
and
call a fooler.
And why do you think I'll come back as a butler?
I swear to God, you got a pair under that dress of yours. A calamine lotion. Yeah, right there. See, calamine lotion. Scratching like a hound.
The minute you start to mess around.
With his friend, child, he started itching.
All right. Thank you very much.
What's that?
I said thank you very much.
I can't hear you.
Turn it off, will you? Thank you very, very much, Mavis.
Hey, take it off. I really like that song.
Okay, bud, we can hear it a little bit later. Do you mind?
No, man, we can play that song. That sounds good. Why'd you turn it off?
There. You happy?
No, because it's fading out.
Well, you're going to have to just let it fade out. God. You guys are giving me a royal pain, I'll tell you that. Anyway, there it is. So that's the song about itching from the Coasters.
Well, I don't understand Poison Ivy. So in other words, it was a song about getting poison ivy, and what's the point?
The point is it was a song about getting poison ivy, I guess. It was about, you know, don't get poison ivy.
Yeah, don't get poison ivy.
Are you trying to tell me that people back then were so stupid that they...
No, they just made fun of it. It was something that was... You got to understand, the mass media was beginning to come into its own. So all of the touchstones, all of the things that people shared, everything that we knew about each other and we knew about living, suddenly we were able to share it over wide spaces. We were able to share it in popular music. We were able to share it on the radio. We were able to share it with millions as opposed to just thousands. And so when popular music really came into popularity, I guess, in the 50s, you would hear songs talking about all this stuff, Poison Ivy. And there was even a song back then about Martians or something, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was. There's a song called A Purple Eater.
Well, a purple people eater?
Purple people eaters, yeah.
What the heck? You guys, really, Phil, with all due respect, whatever it is you're eating, whatever you're taking, I heard you talking about LSD with Jay Moore. What's going on there?
Hey, there's nothing going on. What are you talking about?
Why are you talking like a jackass?
I'm not talking like... You know what the problem is here, Margaret? You don't understand what's going on in the world. You're in some ivory tower.
Oh, I am I?
Yes. How dare you?
I heard you talking about LSD with Jay Moore on the phone here today.
Don't you point your finger at me talking... If you accuse me of taking drugs while I'm on the air, I'm going to tell you something, lady. You're going to have a lawsuit.
Excuse me, my husband's a lawyer.
I don't care. You're going to need more than Frank.
All right, I apologize.
What?
I said I...
Yeah, I can't hear you, lady.
I'm not talking to you, brains.
I didn't hear you, Margaret.
I said I apologize.
Are you saying that you apologize?
I believe I just said that.
I can't hear you. You're going, I'm banging.
Yeah, that's what you're doing, Margaret.
I apologize.
Thank you. Because that's a hell of a thing to accuse a guy of, you know.
I apologize. Good God, are you going to keep beating it into the ground? What a baby.
Yeah, that's a very serious charge, Miss Gray, to say a guy is taking LSD and doing a freak out.
I didn't say anything about a freak out.
Jay and I were talking about something else entirely. It had nothing to do with anything, okay? So thank you very much.
Oh, don't, Phil, don't act all the innocent with me. I'm sure there were times when you had your shirt off and painting your face blue and worshiping at the altar of some god long dead, your pants off, you're in a movie theater someplace dancing with a girl with a flower and she's nude, right?
No, never did any of that stuff. Anyway, the world-famous Phil Henry Show, produced by me, produced by Dan Northcraft, Margaret Gray, Bud Dickman, Robert Leonard. You're all beautiful people. I love you. Thank you for joining us. And don't forget to go online at philhenryshow.com and get a backstage pass and be a part of our backstage pass family. We'll see you on Monday at 10 o'clock. And until then, let that be a lesson to you. Yeah.
Phil Henry.